Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, he wouldn't take off his straw sandals until he'd walked to the ends of the earth to bring an end to the death penalty in Japan. And the disabled helping the disabled. A unique self-help community in India gives independence to the outcast and forgotten.
I have worn straw sandals for 10 years to help innocent prisoners. I keep walking through towns and villages, shouting out about their innocence, appealing to each and every person.
Those are the words of Tairu Furukawa, a Buddhist monk and champion of the poor and prisoners on Japan's death row.
There are as many as 100 million people in Japan. How is it that innocent prisoners can be kept isolated? One day, maybe, some 20 or 30 years from now, everybody will know and help release them. I believe this will happen. And walk, today and tomorrow, till my last day.
Reverend Furukawa was born to a poor family in 1920, the eldest of 8 children. In 1940, he was sent as a soldier to China, but returned wounded to Japan, where he studied Buddhism and became head priest of a temple in his hometown in Saga Prefecture. After the war, he devoted himself to helping the poor, the sick, and those grieving the loss of loved ones in the conflict. His ministry eventually led him to Fukuoka Prison, where he became chaplain and cared especially for those who had been condemned to death. Reverend Furukawa became convinced of the innocence of 2 prisoners and worked tirelessly to have them released, a campaign that cost him his job. He became a self-taught detective and lawyer, digging up clues, filing motions, and lodging appeals on behalf of the 2 men. He sold everything his family had and begged throughout the country for signatures and alms to fund a campaign for retrial.
A world that cannot save even the life of one man, this I cannot believe. A world that does not execute any innocent prisoners, this I wish to believe and show to be true. For otherwise, I myself must remain unsaved and unable to live. I cannot take off my straw sandals.
Furukawa wandered the streets of Japan until his death in the year 2000, calling for justice for the innocent and an end to the death penalty. How many pairs of straw sandals did he consume throughout all those years? They must have been many by the time one of those prisoners he'd been fighting for, Kenjiro Ishii, was released in 1989, after 43 years behind bars. Furukawa had succeeded in commuting his death sentence in 1975, the same year Ishii's less fortunate jailmate was executed.
Physically, we are very poor, as you see, because my parents had to sell all the property they had.
Tairu Furukawa's daughter, Sayuri, is now wearing his sandals and trotting the uphill path seeking an end to the death penalty in Japan. She runs the Sai Meizan Schweitzer Temple, which her father established in 1973 in Kumamoto Province, in what was once their family home. Inspired by the Nobel laureate Dr. Albert Schweitzer's self-sacrificing work as a physician for Africa's poor and his global advocacy for a nuclear bomb-free world, Furukawa named the temple for his mentor, calling it Reverence for Life.
My father is not only a father to me, but also a spiritual leader or teacher to me. Besides, I think he was a great artist. So he was also a teacher in the field of art. It was quite natural things for us to carry on his work because our temple is an independent Buddhist temple and belonging to no religious school or sect, so free. And most Buddhist temples don't cope with any social problem that we cope with.
The reverence for life Furukawa bore was to take him back to China, to the place where Japanese imperial soldiers butchered more than 250,000 people in what is known as the Nanjing Massacre of 1937. The death toll far exceeded the numbers killed by the bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In 1984, the ascetic monk took a group of 100 Japanese to Nanjing on a pilgrimage of purification to ask forgiveness for the crimes perpetrated by other Japanese. It is a pilgrimage that has become a yearly ritual for Sayuri and members of the temple.
I feel deep sorrow for the victims. Every time I go there, I cried in my heart. So mostly young people in Japan don't know what happened in the past. So to let them know the truth, true history, we ask young people to come and join our journey to China and pray together. We will carry on our memorial services both here in Japan and in China too.
Furukawa deepened his knowledge of Christianity, studying its tenets and reading the Bible. As chance would have it, the Buddhist monk met a number of Catholic Xaverian missionaries working in Japan, and together in 1987, they opened the Saimezan, or Mountain of Life, Center for Interreligious Dialogue. It was to be the first religious institution for Buddhist-Christian activity in Japan. The interest it generated was enormous among people of all faiths. Some 2,000 people visited the center in its very first year.
In 1985, my father met Father Frank Sotkornura, Xaverian missionary father. He had the same dream as my father had, to create a center for interreligious dialogue. So we have just started work together to build Center for Religious Interreligious Dialogue. So there are many great persons who I deeply respect, like Mother Teresa, or mostly Christians. So the gospel and Christian faith is so precious to me, and I think those are spiritual treasure to me too. Also, my father talk about the story of Jesus when I was a little child, so close to the Christian faith.
Sayuri feels it is significant that the center is built in the very same area where she points out in the 16th and 17th centuries, Christians were persecuted. It was a time, she says, in which the encounter between Christianity and Buddhism ended in tragedy. Furukawa brought the temple's activities to the world stage, lecturing at international faith conferences, collaborating with the Catholic lay community Sant'Egidio, and many others. He met Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa of Calcutta. In 1998, he met Sister Helen Prejean, whose anti-death penalty book, Dead Man Walking, made the Catholic nuns a household name. She has supported the temple's activities ever since, particularly projects demanding the reopening of cases of prisoners unjustly condemned.
My father met Sister Helen Prejean in Bucharest, Romania in 1998 when my father was invited to the international conference. Then they appealed against the death penalty. And then when my father received an email from Sister Helen Prejean, he passed away 1 week ago, unfortunately. So we asked Sister Helen to join our meeting in Tokyo. She came and she saw the video about my father's life story. Then she gave her lecture. suddenly she said, "I will come to Japan to help your campaign next year." So I was very happy, and she was like a light in the darkness we faced at that time. So she, since 2002, she has been supporting our campaign.
Together with Sister Prejean, the temple has created an immense support network of Japanese and American law students who help their anti-death penalty campaign. Perhaps for the first time, Sayuri says, we are seeing many consciences change, even here in our country, which is so influenced by the idea of vendetta. Some 80% of Japanese support the death penalty, but change is in the air. The nation's new justice minister, Kaiko Chiba, a known opponent of capital punishment, recently opened the doors of a chilling execution chamber where convicts are hanged at an hour's notice. The first ever television images sparked a national debate on the death penalty, which looks unlikely to subside anytime soon.
Right now, we face very difficult things, but we will carry on our work because my father's spirit lives on within us and in our work. But 80% of Japanese people support the death penalty. So it's very difficult for us to carry on our work. But spiritually, I'm very happy inside.
Sayuri Furukawa of the Saimetsan Schweitzer Temple. Japan, along with the U.S., is one of the only two group of eight rich countries that retains capital punishment. It currently has 107 inmates on death row. 58 countries today still retain capital punishment across the globe. In his 1995 encyclical Evangelium Vitae, Pope John Paul II wrote that the primary purpose of the punishment which society inflicts is to redress the disorder caused by the offense. Public authority, he wrote, must redress the violation of personal and social rights by imposing on the offender an adequate punishment for the crime, as a condition for the offender to regain the exercise of his or her freedom. In this way, authority also fulfills the purpose of defending public order and ensuring people's safety, while at the same time offering the offender an incentive and help to change his or her behavior and be rehabilitated. It is clear that for these purposes to be achieved, the nature and extent of the punishment must be carefully evaluated and decided upon, and ought not to go to the extreme of executing the offender except in cases of absolute necessity. In other words, when it would not be possible otherwise to defend society. Today, however, wrote the Pope, as a result of steady improvements in the organization of the penal system, such cases are very rare, if not practically non-existent. From an invisible life begging on the streets of Calcutta, cripples and lepers in India are transforming into visionary entrepreneurs and impacting those around them. Thousands of similarly differently abled people in India are now leading fulfilling and autonomous lives thanks to a Gandhian-inspired project called the Trace and Treat Campaign, initiated about 60 years ago by victims of leprosy and disabled in India. Well, today their ranks have swollen to include orphans, unwed mothers, and people who suffer age-related problems. Professor of Anthropology at the Catholic University of Louvain, Belgium, João Coelho, has been investigating the success of the project in Anandwan in the Indian state of Maharashtra. There, in satellite communities across the state, more than 5,000 lepers, cripples, blind or mentally challenged people have been empowered by pioneering projects in agriculture, fish farming, education, industrial production, and environmental protection. Many of those involved in the project are deaf. I met Professor Coelho at a Vatican conference on the Church's ministry to the deaf and hearing challenged. I was shocked to learn that 80% of deaf or hearing impaired people live in low and middle income countries like Professor Coelho's India.
The problem in the developing world is different from the developed world. In the developing world, everybody is marching ahead. There is no clear-cut definition for disabled or deaf people because the families take care of their deaf. They are not put in asylums or in rehabilitation centers, but they live with the families. So the problem there is different than the problem we see in the developed or the first world. The deaf are a gift of God to the community and to the planet. And the deaf are potential leaders, born leaders. The able-bodied society has to create space and opportunities for them to contribute in the planet-making, world-reshaping, community-remaking projects. There is a strong responsibility on the able-bodied society not to keep them out of the main center of the planet. They have to be included so that they enrich with the gifts God has given them in building a community of all brothers and sisters living together in harmony. So there is a challenge for the able-bodied society to include them as early as possible.
In the developed world, the differently abled lament they are often stigmatized and ostracized in their communities. How are their physical differences perceived then in India?
Stigma is a very strong weapon in the Indian society. We have this caste system which is already stigmatizing people as born in a better circle or in a weaker circle. Then this illnesses like deafness, blindness is also a big stigma. And if people know that there is some deaf person, then the family is stigmatized, not only the person. A family will have difficulties in, say, getting brides and grooms for the other siblings if there is a person deaf, because they would feel that the deafness may be in the family and it could be coming to the offspring.
So how would this family be treated?
This family would be restricted in its choices, economic, education, profession, and social circles.
So it's not just the deaf person, him or herself, who's being ostracized.
No. It is a family, and it is also. I mean, it is the whole house which is being marked as carrying something serious, which should not be passed on to other houses.
Professor Coelho says that in the Trace and Treat campaign, the deaf and blind are called to give a helping hand to those less fortunate than they are.
Yeah, see, these deaf people, they are able-bodied. Apart from their hearing, the rest of their functions are better than the lepers. The leprosy people have, parts of their body are already buried, like fingers have been lost, limbs have been lost. So the leprosy, the deaf people are intact except for their hearing. So they are able to see, and they are the most visible people on the campus. They are mobile. They can take people. They can ride a cycle. They can ride a bullock cart. So the leprosy-affected, crippled, deformed find them as their saviors, who can lead them, who can take them to places, who can feed them, who can do everything except hearing.
the able-bodied reaching out to those who can't do for themselves. But living and working with the deaf raises a unique challenge: how to communicate with each other. Lepers and cripples are learning the language of signing.
The leprosy-affected people and others, they try to learn their language so that they can communicate and understand what they are saying, because they are the most powerful people on the campus.
Today, the campus, actually a village, Anandwan, spreads over 200 hectares and has 3,000 inhabitants. The village boasts two hospitals, a university, an orphanage, a school for the blind, and a technical wing. Its satellite communities of Somnath and Hamalkasa, together with numerous sub-centers, support another 2,000 people. These communities have become nearly self-sufficient through organic farming and micro-water management and cottage industries that generate enough income to buy food and other things the community cannot produce itself.
The project is having about 5,000 members, and their main project is Anandwan, after which they have started 6 satellite villages where they go out to help. So the surplus people and surplus talent is distributed over another 6 villages. And they train others. You know, they have their own agriculture by which they produce their own food, fruit, vegetable. They also have their own industrial belt where they make their own cloth. For example, what I wear is made by them. They spin cloth, they stitch, and they use for them. And what is surplus, they sell in the open market. They have their own fisheries, ponds where they grow. They use their rainwater harvesting of rainwater and cultivating fish. Then they also have machines which they operate for repairing cycles, making tricycles, bicycles, wheelchairs, artificial limbs for the leprosy-affected people. And then they have their own dairy, cows, buffaloes, goats. They also have started schools for the blind, for the deaf, for the crippled. And now they have 3 colleges: arts, science, commerce, and agriculture, for the use of the able-bodied people. So they are the owners. People come there. So they are empowering others. This project has been started by one Gandhian, a follower of Gandhi, in 1949. This project is going, and a person like me is going there to learn from them their techniques of world remaking and world reshaping. So I am a keen follower and a student of the spirituality of the disabled. They teach me. They have everything to give, much more than me. They make me their guest. They provide me food. They cook their food, the lepers. And I feel quite thrilled to see that they can achieve so much in life.
How have you seen this change the lives and the feeling about themselves of lepers and deaf people?
You see, they have 2 versions of their story. The first is the neglect, the stigma, the chasing away by their own parents, their families, their wives. See, they have been chased. So that is the sad part of their background. The present is that they are, you know, from those ruins of their life, they have come to a level where they don't miss anything. They only miss opportunities to serve the society. And that's why they have started this thing. And they feel, had I not been a leper, had I not been a deaf, I would have been at home and just languishing like my other siblings. But here, I am the maker of my destiny. I have a future. We have been blessed. If one hand is not working, what do I do with my second hand? Or if one foot is missing, what do I do? If ears are missing, what do I do with the eyes? So they always say what we have is already a blessing. And they say, okay, it is to celebrate life and thank the giver of life for making us like this. And they're able to entertain people. They also get married. The deaf get married to the blind, or vice versa, or to a cured leprosy-affected person. So they have started their own families, own children, own garden, and they give extremely good conditions for their own children to grow up, schools, colleges, and workshops to work if they want to, or if they say, okay, you get reintegrated in the normal society.
But you're saying that you'd like to see that the religious, which yeah. there's an abundance of
yeah. Yeah.
in India, you'd like to see them be more involved in projects such as this.
Religious in India are involved, some of them, who have not lost the vision of their vocation. But there are many who are, you know, who, for whom being part of the hierarchy, getting the mitre, getting these titles is quite important. And there they make a choice which is more for being part of the top than the bottom, which is just the opposite of what Jesus did. So in that way, the church has the potential to do quite a lot, but there are people who have a different idea of serving the church.
In November 2009, Pope Benedict XVI blamed the shocking numbers of hearing-impaired people in the developing world on a lack of appropriate policies and legislation, and, he said, on the difficulty in accessing primary health care. Deafness, in fact, is often a consequence of illnesses that are easily curable. Sometimes it's simply a question of nutrition.
The deaf who are already deaf, not much can be done in terms of getting them back to a level of hearing. But prevention of deafness can certainly be initiated, you know, by providing them good infrastructure. Like, you know, the women when they are pregnant and all, the problem is nourishment, care is not really as it is in the developed world. So much of our problems, difficulties are are because mothers are undernourished, kids are undernourished, so they don't have the immunity to fight, especially when they are small. And that could be, once that is solved, the children have basic needs satisfied, you know, substantial and sufficient food, good medical care, good hygiene. Then I think gradually, once those things are set in place, people will be having less of these problems.
Clearly inspired by these people who have turned their lives around in such astounding ways, Professor Coelho says there are many lessons to be learned here.
We have to learn from the disabled people, you see, that, and give them a chance to take care of us instead of we wanting to take care of them all the time. So I experience in my life that the lepers, the deaf, the dumb are taking good care of me, and I have no complaints about them. Only thing, they are doing too much. So I feel the able-bodied society could give them a chance for them to exhibit the gifts of God which are in them.
And a warm thanks there to Professor João Coelho of the Catholic University of Louvain, Belgium. That concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.